Hey everyone, welcome to the Crack Movie Club, the show where we try to make you an expert on your favorite films. I'm Tom Ryman, and I'm joined today by my guest host,
Dave.
David Bell.
How's it going?
Really got into that. All right. Yeah. We're the so-called cracked experts on pop culture films from the last few decades. We're here to point out some things you may or may not have known about your favorite classics and drop observations, nitpickings, fan theories that might ruin the movie for you, or maybe not. Really depends on how mature you're willing to be about it. For the next hour or so, we're going to be talking about 1989's Uncle Buck, directed by John Hughes. Along with us today is our guest, Jamie Loftus, who's a very funny comedian and hosts the Bechdel Cast.
Hi.
Hey.
What's up?
Not much. Great to have you back.
Yeah, good to be back talking about feminist icon Uncle Buck.
Yes.
Yeah.
You described it in a perfect way before we started recording. There, as a B-side.
Yeah, it's a John Hughes B-side. Yeah,
it's a deep cut. Before we begin, Jamie, would you tell us when the first time you watched this movie was?
Oh, yes, yesterday.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Were you aware of this film, or?
I vaguely remember because John Candy was on my list of very bizarro childhood crushes.
Sure.
So I knew of the movie, but I had never actually seen it.
Mm.
But all that said, John Candy hot, R.I.P.
I feel like this is a movie that our entire generation watched once as kids and don't remember. Because everybody I talk to about this movie are either thinking of another movie or haven't seen it in decades.
There's not much going on in this movie. I think that that's like maybe why no one remembers. Like, it's not. It was fun. I liked watching it. But there was like, oh, there not that much happens.
That's, I've noticed as we've been doing John Hughes Month, that's pretty true for a lot of his movies.
Really?
There's like very minimal plot, and it's just kind of the characters in different wacky situations, and then I mean there's an inciting incident, and then there's like a conclusion, but like the middle part is just
kind of goofs. Second act is just a repeating scenario involving a teenager doing a very bad Winona Ryder impression.
Mm.
And then it's like punctuated by the clattering of pans.
That's right.
And then it just starts over.
Forgot that's the button of the movie.
There, yeah. just a big old pan clatter.
And a classic pan gag.
They start with a bowling ball clatter, too. There's lot of clatter.
I feel like a lot of John Candy movies were like that. You know, Great Outdoors, Only the Lonely.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
Delirious, is that right?
A clatter-heavy guy, right. Yeah.
Once Upon a Crime. Yeah. In terms of movies that you saw one time. Jamie, I'm going to have to ask you for another favor, and that would be to humor us with a brief summary of the events of Uncle Buck.
Pretty short.
In your own words.
Okay, so Uncle Buck is a movie about an uncle named Buck, number one. he appears to be a gambling addict, or we're told he's a gambling addict. We never actually see him gambling, really, but they're like, Buck is he's kind of like a loser. He's like, old and... Not old, but he's like 40, and he's been dating this enterprising businesswoman who sells tires, but somehow because she sells tires, that makes her white trash and is not... Yeah. That was unclear to me.
She
owns her business. Like, why is everyone like, she sucks, but whatever.
Right. His brother's wife is really derisive about that particular fact. Oh, that woman who sells tires.
Literally every female character in this movie, with the exception of tiny Gabby Hoffman, is a total drag. John Hughes really leans in on shrewy women in this movie. But anyways, so Uncle Buck is needed to take care of tiny Gabby Hoffman and tiny Macaulay Culkin and B-side Winona Ryder. I don't know what her name is. And here's the thing about her. She is mean. She does not like her Uncle Buck. And she goes to a high school that is all the same, like, goth-adjacent guy over and over.
The entire town is goth. That was actually a log line.
Really?
entire high school
so
is
bizarre.
Goth.
I was like, what, everyone?
Was it like an art school or something?
I don't know.
Like, what was going on there?
I think it's Winnecta is where it's supposed to be, so it's
that's not, yeah. So then most of the movie is like Uncle Buck trying to prevent not Winona Ryder from losing her virginity to a guy named Bug, who by the end of the movie, there's a crazy sequence. Like, basically nothing happens for a very long time. Pans are clattering. Mm-hmm. Macaulay Culkin's whipping out one-liners.
He is.
And then eventually Uncle Buck is, in a frantic, he could gamble or he could prevent not Winona Ryder from losing her virginity to Bug. And so he's like, I'm going to go save not Winona Ryder. And then he bursts in on Bug raping a teenage girl.
A different teenage girl.
Not Winona Ryder.
Yeah. Winona Ryder.
Right. And then kidnaps the teenage rapist, finds not Winona Ryder, and then they hits a golf ball at him, and then everything's fine.
That's a pretty good sum up. On this show, we like to compare your plot description to a few of our own rudimentary summaries. Feel free to join us in our segment, Terrible Loglines.
John Candy will stop at nothing to prevent his niece from losing her virginity, comma, falls in love with her?
Question mark?
Drill-wielding kidnapper cooks child's underwear.
A man buys a collection of hats based purely on how much they enrage people.
A grown man and his goth-adjacent niece abduct a teenage rapist and neglect to drill his teeth out.
Huge oversight.
Yeah. Man gets job at tire shop. It just takes a while.
Yeah, it's a real circuitous journey to accepting that job. A man drives to an extended babysitting gig with a rape kit in his trunk.
Lazy man becomes less lazy, experiences few consequences.
Parents heroically refuse to take their children to see their dying grandfather.
Yeah, what?
There were a few throwaway lines of like, I don't think that's a good idea.
Right, and also, she never elaborates on it.
And also, not Winona Ryder doesn't seem to be upset about it. She's just, like, she's at no point is she just like, man, I hope my grandfather isn't dead. Like,
yeah, I would love to go see Pappy.
She's like, I'm just trying to get fingered by a guy named Bug, and like that's her whole thing.
She's like upset by the principle of it. Like, she really is hard on her mom for moving away from her grandfather, but seems to have no interest in seeing him herself.
Sorry, I just want to submit the phrase finger bugged. Okay, continue.
Finger bugged.
Continue.
That was it.
That's it. That was the end of that thought.
Yeah.
All right. Anybody have anything else they wanted to add? All right, now that you know the plot of the movie, let's dive into the making of the movie from pre-production to post-production in a segment we call Expensive Pretending. Dave, you did the lion's share of the work on this section.
Sort
of.
I applaud you, sir. I just went through the DVD production notes and copied.
The research is going to, I don't know. Like, I remember last time, Jamie, you came in ready to go.
I
don't know how much you are this.
I'm pretty ready.
Okay. I was going to say, because information on Uncle Buck is surprisingly scarce.
It's almost like people don't really care about it.
Right. Yeah, yeah. It's almost like it's an irrelevant movie.
There was apparently a TV documentary that came out at the time, a making of. But I couldn't find it anywhere online. I found like a clip from it.
Yeah, I saw the same 3-minute clip. It was a movie that had a budget of $15 million, which is surprising for, I guess it's all the location stuff. Because, you know, Buck's apartment's like in the middle of downtown Chicago.
Right. And they built a bunch lot of sets.
Yeah, like they just like took over a school and started just building Uncle Buck sets inside of a school.
That's another weird through line in John Hughes movies. I think every movie we've talked about so far has built a set inside of a high school gymnasium.
There's something subconscious there. And weird in there. Like, why is John Hughes always got to be in a school?
He just refuses to leave high school.
Yeah, he never wanted to leave.
He can't get over it.
But Uncle Buck was the first in a 3-picture deal that John Hughes had with Universal. I couldn't find precise confirmation of what the other two movies. I think they were career opportunities, and either The Great Outdoors or Beethoven.
That's career a stinky deal.
Yeah.
That's a film no one remembers.
Oh, man.
I didn't know that was a film that existed.
About a guy working at a Target.
It's about a guy working at a Target.
Ooh.
And Jennifer Connelly.
And Jennifer Connelly. They get locked in overnight with burglars. It is a bad film.
Bad.
He wrote, John Hughes wrote the entirety of the Beethoven series, I think.
Yeah.
Under a pseudonym for the sequels.
Because he was too ashamed to be writing about movies that were starring
a dog and Charles Grodin.
Slightly CGI dog. Beethoven, that's one of those movies that's like my biggest, like as a kid, that was my biggest fear of like that exact span of cat and dog movies where they're using real animals, but you could tell they're digitally manipulating the eyes a little bit to be to give him like little, oh my God, I would have nightmares about the creepy eyed dogs. The worst one is the cat in Stuart Little.
Oh, really? I was going to say Cats and Dogs.
Cats and Dogs is a terrible one.
Yeah, that one really creeps me out.
Man, there's a couple. They hadn't
quite. I threw up during that movie.
And when I was, they hadn't quite perfected that when I was a kid. We still had like Homeward Bound and Bingo, where the dogs don't actually talk.
Oh, yeah.
But that's just like a bunch of long shots of dogs running.
Yeah,
that's
somebody doing a voiceover.
Yeah.
But anyways.
That's nice.
Dave, why don't you tell us a little bit about the casting of this movie?
Well, there's, of course, John Candy as Uncle Buck. He wasn't, well, he was, I assume he was the first choice, but he wasn't the only person considered for the role. Danny DeVito was also considered for Uncle Buck, which would have been terrifying.
That would have made this into, like, a serious, like, suspenseful drama, I think.
I think it would have been a more interesting movie if someone, like, less completely lovable was Uncle Buck. Because it's like, John Candy, I don't know, you're just like, whatever. He's great. He's
yeah.
great.
Yeah,
he's such
harmless.
A little cutie pie.
Yeah, like, you're never mad at Buck.
You're never going to hate
you can't,
John Candy.
You can't, like...
You cannot.
Yeah, Danny DeVito is just, I don't know. That would feel so mean and weird.
Right. I think he's the same height as Macaulay Culkin in this movie.
And that's the other one in this, Macaulay Culkin. I think, is this his first movie?
I don't think so.
Third movie.
Oh, what were the other two?
I love doing homework. I don't know. But I do know that, like, the scene, the little inspiration for Home Alone is, like, in mm-hmm. this movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, the part with the mail slot.
Little mail slot Macaulay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, cute. When he's talking to Shanice through the mail slot.
Yeah.
And then as Maisie is Gabby Hoffman,
yep.
who apparently hated working with Macaulay Culkin on this movie.
Child enemy?
Yeah, she called him a brat. Like
child
later on,
foes,
and said that he used to like bully her and tell her that he was older and smarter than her.
What if he was?
Yeah,
half of that is true.
Probably, yeah.
definitely older than she is.
And she hasn't talked to him apparently since this movie, which is a hell of a grudge.
That's like 27-year-old beef at this point.
Well, but also it's like, who wants to talk to their childhood bully? And then if your childhood bully just happens to be Macaulay Culkin.
Yeah.
And also she's like kicking his ass in terms of career now. She showed him.
Yeah, he's not doing anything.
No, he's got that weird band or something.
He's got the pizza band.
Yeah. He may be doing an extended practical joke on all of us.
Yeah.
But either way.
Yeah, if he comes out later as being like, oh, and it was all a joke, it's like, well... But you wasted your life, and no one cares.
Yeah, who is the joke on at that point?
Who have you pranked, sir?
For the teenager, for the not Winona Ryder, Tia, that's Jean Louisa Kelly. This was her first movie.
Yeah, and she had just been on Broadway in Into the Woods.
Okay.
Oh. I did not enjoy her performance at all. I thought it was confusing, and I just spent the whole... And then I was like, oh, of course they would try to get Winona Ryder for this role first.
Oh, they did?
Yeah, they did.
Oh, wow.
And she was like, no thanks. Seems like a real B-side.
Seems like a real B-side.
And then they got B-side Winona Ryder. I don't know.
Winona was like...
Yeah.
Thumbs down. I don't know. I like her performance. I agree that her motivation is somewhat baffling. We see that she's at war with her mom over having to move there, but she seems like super popular and has a boyfriend already. I mean, her boyfriend's a piece of shit.
Bug.
Yeah, Bug.
Oh, Bug.
Like, that's at least strike one and two right there.
Right.
When you meet a guy and he introduces himself to you as Bug.
Yeah, that's a red flag.
Yeah, it's several red flags.
It's weird to me, too, that, I mean... In retrospect, John Hughes perhaps did not understand teenagers quite as well as we gave him credit for for a long time. But, like, this is just, like, a fundamental misunderstanding of a teenager's motivation at anything. Like, this is super confusing. It's like, well, she's a teenage girl, so she's going to be horny, she's going to be crossing her arms, she's going to be pouting, she's going to be yelling. But it's like there's no rhyme or reason to anything that character does.
Right. She's just opposed to whatever the authority figure is in the film.
Which is, like, super oversimplification of, like, what could have been an interesting character, I thought.
Yeah. Yeah, I see that.
Yeah, we never really get much of an arc with her, except that she delights in her uncle torturing a guy, and that's how they bond. I have some thoughts on that, where I think the idea with her is she is kind of like Uncle Buck, where she also is very jaded about family and doomed to be a loner, and this is these two people sort of bonding over this similar experience and accepting family by the end. It's just not a very... I didn't find the arc too clear in it. Like, it took
sloppy,
a second watching. Yeah.
Yeah, I guess, we just never got that scene where it was like, I guess we're supposed to infer that something clearly happened when she ran away to go spend the weekend with Bug, and then
But we don't find out what it
was. We don't find out what it was, except that she's upset, and she's just, I guess that's when she, I don't know if she realizes she was in danger because Bug's clearly a rapist.
Which is, yeah, super glossed over.
Yeah.
I sort of, every time I watch a new movie, am hyper tuned to look out for how like the female characters are being portrayed.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
And this movie just like sucks for that. There's not one, I mean, with the exception of Gabby Hoffman, who is six, there's like every woman that is on screen is totally shrewd out. Even when, I mean, and some of them have perspective and have an arc, and but like the mom from moment one, they're like, oh, she doesn't like Uncle Buck, but Uncle Buck is so freaking fun. Why is she so mean? And then we meet the teenager, and she hates everybody. And we meet the school lady, she's mean. We meet Uncle Buck's girlfriend, she's, you know, mean and yelling all the time. It's just there's not one fun female role in this movie at all.
You've forgotten about the batshit crazy neighbor.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. That's the fun. Oh yeah. The horny neighbor.
That's the fun one.
We know nothing, but we know nothing about her except that she's horny. Right. Like, that's it.
It's a solid Laurie Metcalf, basically cameo, because she's only in two scenes.
Yeah.
And right. She has fun with what she's doing, but her character is baffling.
One last casting thing.
Yes,
I just want to note that Bug is played by Jay Underwood, who's the only thing I saw in his credits that I really gravitated to was he played the Human Torch in the 1994 Fantastic Four movie that no one saw.
Right.
Bug!
Bug!
Goddamn it, Bug! Can't catch a break.
Also, Anna Chlumsky, I guess is how you pronounce her name? From My Girl and now on Veep, is sitting next to Maisie in the classroom scene.
And she was in that movie with Macaulay Culkin.
My Girl.
Yeah.
Yep.
Oh, yeah, that's the one.
Mm-hmm. It's a weird-ass movie.
Yeah, you should do that movie.
One of us by bees. Yeah, Culkin Month.
Culkin Month.
I didn't see anything I wanted to point out with crew. The director of photography was Ralph D. Bode, who also shot Saturday Night Fever.
Nice. Yeah, there's some old-school crew members. There's Lou Lombardo, who co-edited this with his son. He did The Long Goodbye and The Wild Bunch. And I watched this again last night, and I realized the editing is actually quite good in it. There's a lot of moments, like where the bowling ball that you mentioned falls on John Candy.
Mm-hmm.
That seems like such an old joke, and it made me laugh just because of where they cut it, which was like right in mid-yell.
Yeah.
Like there's a few beats in there that, like, comedic beats that I would say is entirely because of the editing.
Right, the edit's the punchline.
Yeah, and there's some really weird and interesting editing in this. And it seems to work for the most part. So I just wanted to...
You called out the scene where the family's in bed and then we hear the heart monitor increasing and then it flatlines. And that's telling
dark.
us that her father's just had a heart attack.
And then the phone rings as it flatlines.
There's a single frame of just red when Buck gets hit in the face with the door.
Yeah, and mm-hmm. goes flying in the air. There's a couple comedic beats like that that are really weird.
That made me laugh, but I was like, what? Okay, I guess I'll just go ahead and suspend my belief for a second.
There's I'll accept that.
She said John Candy flying across the room.
Just so much force behind that
kick. Of a revolving door.
Yeah.
There's also an odd use of fisheye lens. Is the part where they're dancing.
Ooh, I was going to say that, yeah.
The part where the dog comes up behind her when she thinks he's assaulting the washing machine.
Right.
There's a shot and that looks like a POV from her butt, which is a really weird choice.
The fisheye shot of the dog. That's...
Of the dog licking her, I think, and she screams.
Yeah.
And it seems like
that
the
is
dog.
That's a POV. That's a Jaws vision shot from her butthole.
From her butthole, yeah.
Yeah.
It's a very weird choice.
We're seeing what her butthole is seeing.
And the dance shots were very bizarre as well. I'm like, why are we supposed to feel sick as this is happening? It was
it's when they're doing the dip, when he keeps dipping, like this weird fisheye is like never a good choice. It's like very specific. And I think it's been misused. It may not have been the case at the time the movie came out in 89, but at this point, I think it has been so misused, sort of like a Dutch angle. Where now it's just like irritating when you see it.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't mean anything anymore.
Well, I will say, made for a great MySpace profile pic back in the day.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Fisheye, mm-hmm. you're going to be getting some comments.
Oh, yeah. Fisheye was the 2003 equivalent of a high angle selfie.
Up angle.
Yeah, high angle selfie.
You're going to be getting some PC for PCs on that shit if you haven't.
The movie was originally supposed to take place in Indianapolis, which is where the family moved from, but there wasn't any snow that winter, and John Hughes really wanted it to be taking place during the winter, so they moved production from Indianapolis to Chicago.
Right, and the high school was chosen because they just wanted the closest possible location to where their on-location shots were going to be. So they just sort of took this abandoned high school mm-hmm. and just turned it into their, not only the sets, but their entire production offices. They had an editing suite in there. I think they had a sound booth.
Yeah, and then they had rooms for, like, all of the three child actors to have classes with their tutors.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. They had actual classrooms in there.
They all fall, I mean, even though Tia's a teenager, she still falls under the labor rule where it's like you can only film with them for like 4 hours a day, and right. they also have to be doing class at the yeah. same time.
And it's surprising how much of this film was shot on a set. I think the only interior that isn't a set is Buck's girlfriend's apartment when he calls her, or when she's listening to the answering machine.
Really?
Yeah. The entire interior of the house is a set. They were all set up in the gymnasiums of that high school.
What about the bowling alley?
Oh, no. Yeah, that's the other non-set.
Oh, okay.
The high school, when he goes to visit the teacher and stuff, that's all set as well.
Just because it was there already?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah. That was another bizarre scene in the bowling. First of all, there's like, I feel like 50% of the scenes in this movie have no bearing on the plot.
Yeah, and it's pretty standard John Hughes. Where things it's just, are just middle section is characters, hijinks.
Yeah, no one's really growing or developing, but things are happening. There's mm-hmm. actions, there's reactions. That scene in the bowling alley is super weird where it's like, I feel like there's just like a lot of moments and it's like, well, here's another redeeming moment for Uncle Buck. But for me, I was just like, okay, well, I liked him already. Like, you don't have to keep redeeming him. He seems like, you know, he's maybe got some troubles, but he doesn't, like, do anything
right.
inherently bad ever. Like, and then there's that scene where that guy's harassing mm-hmm. Tia, and then Uncle Buck, you know, feminist icon Uncle Buck comes in and is like, don't talk to my niece that way. And then, that's it. It's like, oh, what a good guy.
Right. Yeah, you're right. We were never, from the point we're introduced to him, we never dislike him.
He doesn't really do anything wrong, except
right.
the fact that he's kind of like he's a loser.
Kind of a scumbag, like yeah. in the sense that he just kind of lives in squalor next to Wrigley Field. Is that where he is?
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah. But also, like, that's kind of his prerogative.
Sure. I mean, he's not hurting anybody.
Anyone.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And he takes the guy that I was going to say earlier that when he's about to drive the kids to the horse track, taking him to that bowling alley seems like it was more harmful. Like,
yeah, yeah, kind of.
That skeezy dude who had clearly just had his ass kicked the night before, he's got a black eye and a split lip. Sits
What's
down.
His pickup line?
I forget.
You like all-terrain vehicles?
I think it's right. that
you like best pickup line.
That classic, yeah, that Tucker Max chestnut.
Oh. Jesus, I forgot that guy existed.
But like from the scene we're introduced to Uncle Buck, I think it was like a weird kind of like a conveying of John Hughes-y values where like mm-hmm. the first scene we see him, he's with Shanice, but they're having that conversation in like the bar or the restaurant or wherever they are, and she's like, why don't you want to marry me, why I want to have kids, all this stuff, and he sort of just says, that's not what I want to do with my life, that's not what I want, and I've always said that's not what I want, and blah blah blah, which looking at it now is like, okay, I mean, I guess he's being pretty clear.
Yeah.
And like she's you know, able to leave whenever she wants, but I think that like the plot would have you believe like, well, why doesn't he want family? Why does he want kids? Like, what's wrong with this guy? We're sort of like, but he's not like, he's not even really leading her on, except for like the fact that he'll get a job, which he blows off. But like, I don't know. I was like, he's not doing anything wrong. He's just like, yeah, I suck and I would like to keep sucking.
Yeah, I would love to continue sucking.
Yeah.
Interesting that Shanice is such a hard name to remember. The actress Amy Madigan actually came up with that name for her character. She named her character.
Weird.
Yeah.
Why? I wonder why she chose that.
I don't know. I had read some interview in Vanity Fair where she just said she liked the sound of the name and liked the pairing of it with Koblowski.
Huh.
Shanice Koblowski. Well, that is pretty cool.
Yeah. And she's also from the Chicago area, so she was just like, yeah, that sounds like a Chicago lady's name, like a Chicago woman.
All right.
Who would own a tire shop.
That's fair.
Yeah.
I'll take her word for it.
Also, she's married to Ed Harris. So,
oh,
like,
weird.
Ed Harris would be hanging out on the set while they were filming.
Which seems, I don't know, something threatening and weird about that
really?
Idea of Ed Harris just skulking around the set of Uncle Buck.
Ed Harris, like, yeah, he kind of strikes me as a a ghoulish figure.
Really?
Yeah, he seems intense.
If you turn around and he's there. I don't know.
Sure. Yeah. If he just swoops in behind you like Batman.
Maybe Westworld just did this to me, but like, yeah, there's something that scares me about Ed Harris. In Apollo 13 when he's wearing his little vest.
He does have the steely-eyed gaze. Yeah.
Well, he was in Mother, wasn't he?
Yes.
He was scary in Mother.
I haven't seen it yet, but I remember that he's in it.
A ghoulish man.
Ghoulish Ed Harris. Not a feminist icon.
Not a feminist icon, Ed Harris.
There's one good story about the production of this movie. I could like we
Precisely
talked about there's
one.
Yeah, there's not much. That during production, John Candy went out with the music supervisor and like drove around Chicago in his limo and just saw a bar he really liked, and they stopped and they started buying people drinks and having a party, and it just became a whole thing. And
a candy fest,
exactly. And the next morning, John Hughes was like driving to work and hears about it on the radio. Like people had called in being like, oh man, I partied with John Candy last night. He's just like, what the fuck? And like shut down production for the day. He was very disappointed with John Candy's drinking.
I wonder if like Candy was like actually super hungover, or if John Hughes was just like, well, I'm going to shut down because you need to get yourself together.
Or that like old, one of my favorites is like, I don't want to come to work, but who can I blame it on?
Yeah, he was just bummed he didn't get invited.
Yeah.
I know there was
There
was definitely like a push and pull over John Candy's drinking, because they're good friends, or they were good friends.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
And I know he was like very upset about his habits.
Yeah, I mean, Candy had a heart attack at 44.
Yeah, and John
definitely
Hughes
compounded by his drinking and smoking.
Yeah, John Hughes stopped making movies really around that time, started writing more, and I think he had movies planned for John Candy.
He did,
and
yeah.
He canceled them all, and I think that kind of devastated him.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
And that's how we got, like, Baby's Day Out, I assume.
Yeah, I mentioned on an earlier episode, there's a lot of unproduced John Hughes screenplays, and a few of them were movies that were intended for John Candy. Like, one of them was about two warring neighbors. It was supposed to be John Candy and Sylvester Stallone.
Right, which sounded delightful.
Yeah.
John Candy, like, I mean,
rip,
rest in paradise, babe. Mm. Like, he could have had a cool second wind.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, yeah, definitely. He's so good.
Yeah.
People
just love him. Like,
yeah.
He's just fun.
I many years ago now, I wrote a column for the site talking about unfortunate final roles of really great actors, and Wagons East is the last movie that John Candy was he died while he was filming it. Mm-hmm. And the movie is so bad, and they did so much bullshit to try to cobble it together because he hadn't finished filming all of his scenes. But in the little bits that he's in, it's like, oh, he's so, even in this shit movie, like, he's so good.
Oh yeah.
That it's like it elevates it from like complete dog shit to like, well, I'll watch it because it's John Candy's last movie.
Right.
He started doing like dramatic roles too a little bit.
Yeah.
He did JFK, which I need to go back and watch that
movie. Dabbling.
Yeah. He was dabbling.
Maybe this is just like indicative of the time we're living in right now, but I did on the way over, just to be sure, look up John Candy problematic, John Candy Alec, because all of our here, like even saying Sylvester Stallone.
Oh shit, yeah.
He's a
that's
bad
a real
man.
Bad one.
Yeah, he's a bad man.
Yeah.
I mean, to John Candy's credit, unless a listener found something I did not, we can still watch John Candy movies.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
good.
Yeah.
I think he's apparently pretty clear.
Maybe he just didn't live long enough to do a truly horrifying thing. We don't know. We'll never know. Rest in paradise.
Did you find anything else out in your research, Jamie?
In my research, I saw various like rumors that it seemed like every working actor was at some point considered for the role of Uncle Buck.
Yeah.
Like Danny DeVito is the one you see the most, but I also saw like Jack Nicholson, John Travolta, wasn't it Bill Murray? Like just all these people that when you picture them in the role, you're just like, I guess?
I couldn't find much confirmation, but I saw all those online.
Yeah.
Right.
Felt like people on IMDb trivia page just being like, yeah, he was probably considered.
Thank you. Jack Nicholson would have been wild.
Yeah.
That would have changed. Like seeing Jack Nicholson wake up at 2 a.m. in a shit apartment next to Wrigley Field, and we know that he's like a gambling addict that may be taking the children to the racetrack. That's a different film.
Well, as much as I love John Candy, like, I think if you cast maybe an actor who seems like, who's like a little bit less completely lovable, mm-hmm. this might have been like a more, like Uncle Buck might have been a little more interesting to watch.
It's a more challenging movie, yeah. definitely.
Right, because there's just truly no point where you're like, I'm not on Uncle Buck's side. Yeah. He always makes, I still can't get over it. I'm like, I was just waiting for him to make a bad choice, and he doesn't.
Like, the only quote-unquote bad choices he makes in the movie are like cute goofs, like when he goes to the wrong house.
Which is another one with great editing, that scene.
Oh, yeah.
The two wide shots of him being like, Bob?
it's so far away in the frame. That is a really good shot.
And then they like stay on him when he realizes he's on the wrong house.
Yeah.
They know to just stay on his face as that realization hits him. And then, of course, another example is the plate. Or he breaks the plate.
No, yeah.
You know it's going to happen the second he walks in where you're just like, well, something's going to shatter and I'm going to giggle and I'm going to feel a little bad about it.
He's going to bust that piano in half or something. I think in like a modern comedy, there would have been like 5 or 6 cuts in that shot, but it's just the same shot of him knocking the plate over
just
and
wandering.
Then doing the bit. Yeah, and then the whole wandering. Ah, oh, it's so good.
And I also enjoyed it is weird. Okay, so the scene where Uncle Buck is trying to prevent not Winona Ryder from losing her virginity or being assaulted, or, you know, it is cutting back and forth between a literal rape scene and some really fun John Candy improv.
Yeah, with all these kids. That's the weirdest. I remember watching this movie when I was a little kid and being weirded out by that scene.
Because I was, you know, whenever it was John Candy and a bunch of goth teens, you know, like button heads, I was like, this is fun.
It's a real roller coaster because it'll be like him doing the goofy stuff and like
his hat.
With his hat.
Where's his hat go?
And then it cuts back to this girl saying, no, please stop. And then Bug's like, no, I'm not.
Don't worry
stop.
About it.
Yeah.
Shove.
It's like you're just fucking like, rape
oh
is happening.
Oh my God. And then. That was very weird. And then the rape reveal that it was like he wasn't even raping a character we know. It's like that's also horrifying. Like in regards to the John Candy improv, he does at one point at this party full of goth teens acquire a beer and is enjoying it.
He does. He just takes a cup. He's like
he is sort of also partying
party.
With them.
Yeah. Why wouldn't he?
Yeah, I guess so.
There's a lot of improv in this movie, pretty typical of all John Hughes films, which we've talked about this past month. I think a lot of it has to do that he writes I couldn't find anything about the writing of this particular script, but he is known for writing the scripts for his movies in like a matter of days and then just shooting that draft.
I guess you can write a movie where nothing happens pretty quickly.
Yeah, and then you hire skilled comedians and just let them improv their way through it, and then you're like, oh, this is fine.
Yeah.
So like the conversation between Buck and Tia at the bowling alley, that's all improv. He's just saying things to her, and she's reacting as an angry teenager.
Okay.
I think a lot of the mail slot scene is improv.
Yeah, he's delightful.
Fucking lost it when he's like, your nails are digging into my arm, goddammit.
The first scene where Tia's like hitting her siblings, like just whacking them around.
Beating
you're just
the
like,
shit
okay,
out of
hi. Yeah, then, I love that scene between Macaulay Culkin and John Candy with the back and forth question.
Yeah.
I watched
that
like 3 times.
It's really
so
good.
Fun.
I read that apparently he had Macaulay Culkin's lines, John Candy, taped them to his forehead or something.
Yeah, on the reverse shots where Candy's not on screen, he had them taped to his head.
That was a fun edit too of just like, I'm a kid, that's my job. Cut to next scene. You're okay, cool.
The editing is so, that's another scene where the editing makes the joke because they're both doing the same monotone and it's like such a quick back and forth between them.
Yeah, I love
it's
that.
It's real good. Oh, back to that Tia beating the shit out of her sibling scene. I love that it ends on Gabby Hoffman being like, boys are so noisy. Like, why do we need them?
Right. And then and then a dog comes out of the laundry and it's like, what?
Well, what threw me is the dog's name is Percy.
Mm-hmm.
But the way little Gabby Hoffman calls it sure sounds like that dog's name is Pussy.
speech impediment.
Yeah, well, she holds on the first like syllable, so it's like Pussy. Like, what is that dog name?
And it might. I mean, it's a weird '80s movie. You never know. Dogs coming out of the
dogs coming out of the laundry.
Machine. Laundry.
Yeah.
And maybe
that's
why it doesn't work. Yeah. Percy's been shitting in it all day. They actually made a giant pancake. For that scene where he makes giant pancakes. They didn't need to, but they sure did.
I mean, they didn't need to build all those sets either, but they did.
Yeah.
You can find recipes for the giant pancake online, too, if you feel like looking for it.
Nice.
Many different people have recreated it.
Oh, yeah. Why was she... That was another part where I'm like, this character's confusing. Where Uncle Buck does one of the first of many pretty decent things he does in the movie, which is make her a pretty nice, like, you know, it's like kind of icky, but it's like, looks like a good breakfast. And she's like, no. Like, and it's like, and then Macaulay Culkin comes downstairs and she's like, don't eat that. I was like,
I'll put you some cereal. I'm like, it's like eggs.
Yeah. Well, no, Macaulay Culkin's upset that there's onions in the eggs, which I can relate to.
Sure.
Because that's disgusting.
But the rest of it's like a grapefruit and like, it looks like a pretty bitchin' breakfast, to be honest.
I watched it around, I was like, oh shit, this is pretty good.
Right. Also, when I was.
But everyone's like, ugh.
When I was a kid and a relative like made me food that I didn't necessarily like, I was always taught just fake it. Like, just be like, oh thanks. Yeah. Like, it's their uncle that they've never met. Like, it's weird to act immediately like a jerk to a stranger, basically. Like,
another brilliant scene is when he's driving there and he's trying to remember what their names are.
Oh, that's funny.
It's
yeah.
so like, it, there's not, it's not really a joke, but it's just John Candy being hilarious.
Yeah.
Because the names he comes up with are ridiculous. They're just.
He keeps saying Larry.
Larry. Yeah. Oh, man.
It was great. Yeah, just a series of confusing reactions from especially the kids in this movie. It's just like, why do you, like, they don't seem to have ever met him, which is like, okay, that would be a reason for us to not like Uncle Buck right off the bat. But why, like, why haven't we met him exactly? Like, it's just like, nothing's really clear.
I have a theory, but we'll get to it. We'll get to it.
Uncle Buck fan theory.
Oh, yeah. We got, man. Yeah. We got pages of fan theories.
The extended Uncle Buck universe. Yeah,
the Uncle Buckiverse. There actually is an Uncle Buckiverse.
There is, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, weird.
So the movie came out in August of 89. It was a big hit. It knocked The Abyss out of the running for number one in the box office, which is cute because Ed Harris was visiting the set of Uncle Buck.
I think The Abyss had been out for a little bit at that point, so it made sense that it knocked it off the number one spot.
Sure.
The thing that... This seems weird to me. The movie was shot, released, and then went on VHS in the same year. Within 1989. I don't know if movies normally do that. That just feels...
No, that's odd, particularly for the time.
Rushed. Yeah. But I mean, why not? It's Uncle Buck. Like,
that's it's like I always say. It's Uncle Buck.
this movie was not liked by Roger Ebert.
Roger Ebert really didn't care for this one.
No, he thought it was mean-spirited. He gave it, I think, like 1.5 stars.
Mean-spirited? How so?
I think it's because John Candy is kind of a bully.
Yeah, the way he solves all the conflicts in the film is to bully the shit out of people.
Yeah, that school official.
That was just one part that I was like, oof. The button to that scene is like, and you're ugly.
Yeah.
Have a rat chew that,
gnaw that thing off your face.
That's amazing.
Like, Jesus.
God, I mean, but that's just like another badly written female character in this movie just receiving abuse and then John Candy literally pumping his fist. Like, I really told her what for. Smokes in a school.
Yeah, smoking a cigar and dancing out to Funky Cold Medina.
It's also like I didn't totally hate him in that scene because he's standing up for his little niece.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, you agree with his point of view where it's like, well, yeah, of course she's going to be.
But also, why does that scene happen?
No idea.
That's never referenced again.
We're never given any indication that she's doing poorly in school.
And it never comes back.
The niece has no arc with that. Like,
no.
Yeah.
That's the one thing that happens to her in the entire movie.
Yes. There were two TV show versions of Uncle Buck produced. One in the immediate wake of the original film, starring Kevin Meaney, R.I.P.
R.I.P.
In the title role, and then like last year they tried to do it again Mike Epps. Yeah.
Why keep trying to reboot the Uncle Buckiverse?
I don't know.
Because like in order, they figured this out in the Kevin Meaney version. I don't know if they did this in a Mike Epps version, but they figured out the parents can't just be away like because her father had a heart attack.
Them.
Yeah, they fucking killed them.
In the
Meaney show.
Geez.
Yeah, the parents are dead.
Which is just like the most horrible. Like, just write a different. You can write a TV series about an uncle. It does not have to be
Uncle
Buck.
Does not have to be Uncle Buck. Yeah.
Yeah,
very
he could
strange.
Just be moving in with them or something, living in their basement.
It's true.
That would have been more fun, too.
They could just do Full House again. Fuck it.
There was
raising grieving children. It's so sad.
Oh, man. He's not equipped to do that.
No.
There was also an Indian remake of the film called Uncle Bun. which has sort of the same plot, except there's a lot more suicide and gang rape in it.
Oh, jeez.
Like, the reason his sister-in-law dislikes him in the Indian version is that she blames him for her sister's suicide.
Well, I mean, that at least gives a reason not to like Uncle Bob.
Right, yeah. A reason to fold him out of her wedding photos.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, that was so sad. And yeah. It just makes her look so mean.
Yeah, she's so, like, mean. That's, like, her one characteristic. And then rather than...
Lazy, bad writing.
Rather than saving not Winona Ryder from near rape in Uncle Bun, he physically battles a gang of rapists to save not Winona Ryder. So that's a
wild
film that needs to be watched.
They watched the original and they're like, you know what this needs?
We need to up the stakes
more
here.
More rapists.
Oh, and that's another weird kind of poorly written, confusing moment in this movie. At the end, when not Winona Ryder has been, the rapist is in the trunk and then he's not, and then there's Uncle Buck in the thing, and then they're back home and the parents come home, and all of a sudden, not Winona Ryder is fine with her mom?
Super chill with her mom now.
Is it because Uncle Buck sucks, or is it because Uncle Buck rules? Like, we don't know.
It's because he rules.
Yeah, it's about her, again, I think
accepting
it's about her
family.
Learning the importance of family, but we never really see it.
That's how the movie was made. Now let's get into some things you may not have noticed in a segment we call Hidden Bullshit.
Secret things.
Oh, yeah. Dave, you got some stuff here.
Yeah, I wanted to talk about the Uncle Buck's relationship with technology. And
sure.
The behind-the-scenes stuff, they talk about how
He's a bit of a Luddite.
Yeah, a little bit. They talk about how they specifically wanted the kitchen to be high-tech. That was very important to them when designing it. And so the idea is that Uncle Buck could have a lot of funny moments trying to figure it out. And, of course, his car is a big piece of crap. And so I think that his relationship with technology reflects Uncle Buck's relationship with people, where that he doesn't go the conventional route, but he figures out how to use everything correctly. Like the griddle he's using wrong to make the big pancakes, he does the clothes in the sink and in the microwave, and his best friend in terms of technology is his car. And he only gets along with Tia when she becomes sort of broken because of her relationship with whatever's going on with her boyfriend. So the idea is that it just symbolizes the fact that Buck is just gets along better when something's a little broken, because he is apparently also a little broken. And yeah, that's my theory on that. I think they just wanted some fun gags with
right. They
yeah,
wanted
that
some
allows
fun
for
buffoonery.
The clattering that John Candy yes. part necessitates. Mm.
That old classic leaning on the hanging pan depository.
Yeah.
Like you do.
Also, I mean, yeah, the car was like, oh, this is just a guy who doesn't change and has not progressed emotionally past 1977
or so. Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, they do that with the music. Like when he goes to her high school, it's like rap music playing. And then
it's
when
young MC's Bust a Move.
Yeah, and then when his car rolls up, they switch it to like old timey music or... just to show that clash between like these cool kids and Uncle Buck.
I read somewhere that this was like one of the earlier movies where it's like rap music was what teenagers were listening to as like, this is what's cool. Now, it's not as opposed to like rock.
Right. Yeah. I don't know if that's true or not. The only early, I mean, it could be.
It seems true.
It seems, I think 89? One of the only other ones I can think of is they're listening to the Aerosmith Run DMC mashup of Walk This Way in The Lost Boys.
Oh.
But even that's not like 100% rap.
Right.
No, that's some rap rock fusion. Yeah.
Buck's comment about his hat, where he's like, this hat enrages a lot of people just by looking at it. I think that's really a comment about himself.
Yes.
Because he knows what his hats look like, and he knows that people think they're dumb and ugly, but he wears them anyway, because that's what he likes.
Yeah. He also doesn't have too much hat awareness, as we learn later, when they
right.
switch his
yeah,
hat
Right, yeah. He doesn't notice
his... Can he not feel his own head? Fan theory.
Fan theory.
Uncle Buck's head is completely numb.
Yes, totally numb. He lost feeling in his head. He is a literal numbskull. A little bit of subtext. I feel like this movie, you keep bringing up that Buck is frozen in place.
Yeah.
He's sort of like an adult. He's a man-child.
Right.
And I think that's totally, that falls in line with a lot of John Hughes movies, the ones he does about adults. are all about adults who are man children or like don't want to, her like stuck and don't want to be mature or don't want to progress. And I feel like this movie is like a collision between the two types of John Hughes movies. You got angsty teens and then you got adult man children. And T is the angsty teen, obviously. Buck's the adult man child. And so there's just two different types of people, but they're both, they have in common, they're kind of unsure about what their place is in the world and what their future is. And then at the end of the movie,
I think it's flirty.
The flirty wave?
The flirty wave.
And at the end of the movie, they realize, oh, if I can just progress this a little bit, then there's so many cool things to be had, like family, I guess, in this movie, or a super romantic relationship with your cool uncle.
A little flirtation with Uncle Buck. I think it's interesting, like, because he is a total man-child, and it's interesting how that trope has kind of evolved a little bit over time, where, like, this is like a man-child who truly is just a man who has a childlike spirit, who behaves like a child. Where now, when we get into like the Judd Apatow,
it's become more like boorish and
like a pervert,
yeah,
immature, like more a teenage man-child as opposed to like a Macaulay Culkin little kid man-child, which seems more a little more Uncle Buck. I was expecting Uncle Buck to be like more of a pervert.
Yeah.
Well, I know Judd Apatow did say, like, when John Hughes died, he like said, yeah, my movies are John Hughes movies. They're just dirtier. Like, it's just John Hughes movies with swears in it.
Well, I thought that was interesting.
Feminist icon, Judd Apatow. Just kidding. Literally stab me.
Stab me in the face.
Please kill me. I'm going to walk into traffic just thinking about a Judd Apatow movie.
Yeah, I saw that quote where he was like, my movies are John Hughes movies just with four-letter words. And I'm like, motherfucker, John Hughes movies have four, most of them have four-letter words in them.
Yeah, that's true.
Like, the F word is in even most of his PG movies.
It's just four-letter words done better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. What
you
if a
dummy.
God, every Judd Apatow movie just needs 45 minutes cut out of it.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I like to take every opportunity to remind people that Seth Rogen is Canadian and we could deport him if we wanted to.
I saw this campaign of yours on Twitter.
I've been saying it forever. People forget he's Canadian.
Going after Seth
We got to get him out of here.
Did anybody have anything else to add in terms of?
No, you know what I'm waiting for.
Oh, yeah.
Talking about.
Sure. Well, I'm going to get us now, jump us ahead to a segment where we pitch scenes we would have liked to see that might have enhanced or ruined the plot. The segment we like to call bonus scenes that should have existed. You got any bonus scenes, Jamie?
Bonus scenes that could have existed. I think that there is a softcore scene that takes place several years in the future between Uncle Buck and Not Winona Ryder. That'd be fun.
Yeah, that would be fun.
That would be a type of experience that could be described as fun.
Okay. No, but okay, let me self-edit a little bit. Okay, so he finds out that he's not actually Bob's brother. He's Bob's adopted brother. And suddenly, the weird flirtatious relationship with who turns out to not be his biological niece makes sense. 10 years pass. Life continues. Uncle Buck gets it together. And so does his goth-adjacent not-niece. They meet up years later. They see each other in a grocery store. He's divorced. She's a high-power lawyer. They hook up.
Uncle Buck too.
I was thinking about that Kill Bill scene every time they say Buck because of that.
Oh, right? Yeah.
My name's Buck. I like to fuck. My favorite part of I saw the first time I saw Kill Bill was on TNT, and they edit that scene.
They have
so. Oh, no.
My name's Buck, and I like to party. So great.
And they have to blur over Pussy Wagon.
Yeah. Oh,
it's a delight watching that movie.
Why
on
would
cable.
They even try to put that on television?
I don't know.
That was how I saw it the first time.
Oh, really? Oh,
yeah,
man.
Yeah.
You must have been so like, well, what's wrong with this guy? He just likes to party. Why is she so mad? Dave, what do you got for bonus scenes?
I was thinking like maybe a post-credit scene where Bug is at home and everything's calmed down and then he hears that drill again and John Candy shows up to finish the job and just tortures him to death and then makes like cuts up his body
and
makes a hilarious oversized burger with him and feeds it to his family.
Yep.
That's gotta still be a John Candy movie. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's gonna be some oversized props.
Yep. I really want a scene where Buck is driving around town in the early hours of the morning looking for a cartoonishly oversized butter pad.
Yeah, he'd have to.
Because there is one.
Yeah.
It's like the size of a throw pillow on top of those pancakes.
He must have, like, maybe he
just mash a bunch
it?
Of, yeah. sticks of butter together? Yeah, maybe.
I wouldn't touch those pancakes either way. Like, it's a delightful idea.
We made
if
with
I
a
woke
snow
up
shovel.
And my weird uncle was like, here, I made you some giant pancakes.
Unless he, like, boiled that snow shovel before he used it to prepare food, you probably shouldn't eat it. But still. Also, that's a lot of syrup. There's a whole lot going on.
There's a lot.
All it's the bacon elaborate. He cooked. Yeah. That's like $1,000 of food.
Yeah.
So you watch the movie. Now let's try to ruin it with some weird, non-intuitive observations in a segment we call Let's Overthink It.
Okay.
Dave, you've been dying not, to get to this
oh wait,
part.
I'm not
theory.
Going to ruin oh, yeah. it. This isn't ruining it. This isn't non-intuitive. This is answering a lot of questions.
Sure.
Why are the kids like so, like, seem to hate him ahead of time? Mm-hmm. Haven't seen to meet him. He's folded out of the wedding picture.
Presumably cut out of the will.
Yeah, yeah. Buck is in the mob. Like, clearly, he's a mob enforcer. He does gambling scams. Everybody he meets, every problem he tries to solve, is solved by threatening them. He has golf clubs and a drill in his car.
And a hatchet. Yeah.
And a hatchet.
Oh, yeah. Why does he just have that?
Yeah.
He has a rape kit in his trunk.
When he talks to that guy, who I believe his name is Pal, the guy who hits on Tia at the,
yeah, his
at
name
the
is
place,
Pal, yeah.
The guy is nervous to see Buck when he walks up to him. Without knowing that it's his.
Clearly just had his
ass
kicked.
And he's clearly just had his ass kicked. Yeah. Buck beat him up, like, the night before for a money reason.
For a debt, yeah.
Yeah, because he doesn't know he's hitting on his niece when he's like, hi, Buck.
Oh, you're right. He's immediately nervous. He's immediately afraid of him.
Yeah, Buck beats people up for a living.
Maybe that's why Shanice is so quick to believe that he'd done something bad.
Yeah,
that's probably true.
He says at the beginning, like, I've never hurt anybody, but he's clearly lying to her. He's clearly pretending like he's not. Like, I think the tire shop is him trying to go clean.
And that's why he's so resistant to it.
Yeah. Whoa. Although he does say at the end, too, that he says, don't drive too fast. I don't want to fix any more of your tickets. Because he's in the mob.
I missed that.
Yeah, he's
and then we meet we meet the guy that he explicitly says he fixes horse races for him. Like, he has a guy that fixes races for him.
Yeah.
That's not something you can casually do.
He has murdered people before.
Probably, man.
Why not just say that and then make it a cool movie to watch?
Yeah. Yeah, if it was just really a mobster. Yeah, if it was explicitly a mobster uncle taking care of a family, that
then
would be.
Then I would want it to be Danny DeVito somehow.
Yeah.
Or Jack Nicholson. I had a theory that, I mean, your theory kind of explains this, but I had a theory that Buck made a deal with Bug and was like, look, man, I won't tell the cops about the rape that I busted up if you don't tell them about the fact that I abducted you and then beat you up in a forest.
Right. And yeah,
but
my
of course, in your theory,
he says basically the same thing, but with his fists.
Right. Where he's like, look, I'm in the mob. If you go to the cops, you're going to wind up tied to an engine block at the bottom of a river.
Yeah.
Also, how did Shanice know where Buck's brother lived?
I had that question too.
Yeah, she just shows up there.
She and then walks in without people just walk into that house except for when Macaulay Culkin's at the mail slot and then no one goes in. It's the entrance. Yeah,
it's because he's home alone.
Yeah,
true. Except I think Gabby Hoffman's there.
Yeah,
right?
Well, yeah.
Somewhere.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe at that point he was just like, I'm sick of these fucking people just walking into my house.
Yeah.
Someone needs to, like,
let
handle
me see
this.
Some ID.
Asking for the license was very funny.
Yeah, he's basically bouncing at his house. Like, let me see your ID. Do you have anything for this?
Do I have any theories?
Fan theories. Delight us with your Uncle Buck fan theories.
Some fan theories. Well, I had a theory where this is tiny Gabby Hoffman, and this is just a very long bizarro prequel to Transparent, or a very long bizarro prequel to Home Alone. I have
also true.
Mm-hmm.
John Candy is in that film.
For a minute, yeah. I really like the Uncle Buck. I mean, going off of the Uncle Buck is in the mob theory, I would want to see the sequel where he unlearns the lessons he basically didn't learn in the first movie and just goes back to a life of crime and this time takes his niece on board.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That's basically Curly Sue.
Or the Kill Bill version for Tia where she gets revenge on when she she'll become a student of Uncle Buck and learn how to whack people off. Well, that's not true. This is not a romantic subplot. this one is more of a teacher-student one.
Sure.
And then she goes back and and Bug disappears, and then she finds him and she kills him.
She's got to track him down.
There's definitely a history of violence vibe to it, because she's like, you know, she has his murderous blood in her.
Ed Harris.
When he kidnaps.
The Ed Harris connection.
There we go. He was watching the shooting of this movie, and he was
just like, his character from A History of Violence was lurking in the background of Uncle Buck.
I wish that there were, it would be amazing if there were several scenes throughout this movie where Ed Harris was just in the background.
Just in the background. Oh, I need
fever dream. Just in the classroom. Slenderman. Okay. Ed Harris could play Slenderman easily. Yeah. If there's a Slenderman movie and Ed Harris isn't Slenderman, huge missed opportunity.
I just love this idea of these any given scene with Ed Harris just haunting the background.
He could be there. He could be in a cabinet. We don't know.
Hollywood's premier ghoulish actor.
I'm going to comb every frame of Uncle Buck to see if I can spot Ed Harris.
Or there's like a few like one frame subliminal Ed Harris.
Yeah.
Like Tyler Durden.
Yeah. Any scene where you just starts feeling uneasy and you're like, oh, Ed Harris must have been in this scene. He's watching them make this. I know he is. I can feel his aura.
The Ed Harris aura theory.
It seems like it'd be really hard to be funny with Ed Harris just staring at you from off camera.
It's a tough thing to do.
Terrifying, man.
Yeah. It's like being a jester, like trying to tell the king jokes about the king. He's just glaring at you. All right, so we've talked about a bunch of John Hughes movies this month. We've talked about some problematic things, other things that were really great, other things that we really enjoy and think would stand the test of time. Now it's time for a segment that we do at the end of every month, which is where we look back at all the movies we talked about and try to decide which one should go on the gold record we sent into space. So the big question is, do we show this movie to aliens? We have a couple to choose from. Okay, so we did 16 Candles, The Breakfast Club, Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, Uncle Buck, and Ferris Bueller's Day Off. Out of those five, if you had to pick one to catapult into space for little Gleep Glorps to watch in their UFOs, which one would you guys pick?
Well, let's knock Uncle Buck out of there right away.
You think not Uncle Buck?
No, I mean, even people on this planet don't need to really see it.
Well.
I haven't done a second viewing on a lot of these, but I think I would pick The Breakfast Club.
Breakfast Club?
I agree. It seems tempting to do Ferris Bueller, but he's sort of a little shit. And I don't want, if I want aliens to see what our teenagers are like, I want them to see The Breakfast Club.
Yeah, I don't like Ferris Bueller's Day Off at all.
Really?
Yeah, it's just a glorification of a rich asshole teen. Like, I don't like that movie.
He is kind of a
dick. He is the villain.
Next to the child molester, that is the principal.
Well, yeah, but I mean, the character
is
in the
child pornographer. The morality yardstick in Ferris Bueller is not very good. Yeah. It's bad.
I can either go my own. I can either 12 Angry Men this.
I mean, I will say I think the aliens would be delighted by Uncle Buck. I think they would have
they're
no
really,
problem with the
really
movie.
Really
and they'd be like, oh, yeah,
Buck.
That guy's funny.
If we wanted to show the aliens a fun middle-of-the-road movie, yeah.
Yeah. What are you fighting? What's the...
I'm thinking Planes, Trains, and Automobiles.
Oh, okay. Oh,
that is, I think morally, that has the best lesson, probably.
Kinda. I mean, it's right. Sort of an arbitrary moral, but
it's just like if a guy bugs you a lot, maybe be patient because
don't be mean to people. Yeah. Like,
which is, it's good. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm going to go with Planes, Trains, and Automobiles.
Nice.
All right.
So yeah, 2-1 Breakfast Club. All right. Yeah. Looks like we're flinging that one into space.
I mean, I don't know why we'd have to just choose one movie to give to the aliens.
Because
like,
those are the rules.
I'm just
Dave.
Saying, like, a USB drive can hold a lot of
That's
movies.
That's true, yeah.
Like, we don't have to put it on a disk.
Whatever format they watch films on, like, I don't know, Liquid or whatever that they stick their eye stalks into to absorb entertainment, I'm sure it can fit multiple films in it.
Or it's like LaserDisc.
Right, yeah. Or Beta. They just stopped at, like, a real stupid one.
They're really into Beta.
Yeah, they're super into Beta. It's higher definition than VHS. Yeah, but it's dumb.
The aliens have strong opinions. Yeah.
They really picked. They picked some hard sides in the different format. They bought up a lot of HD DVDs.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Really drew a line in the sand, there, in the intergalactic sand. All right, so we're done here. But we want to talk to you about how you can talk to us. So check us out on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Cracked Movie Pod. Please hit us up with your thoughts, people. We've been Tom, Dave, and Jamie. Jamie, where can we find you online? What do you want to plug?
You can find me on Twitter.com at HamburgerPhone. You can listen to my weekly podcast with Caitlin Durante about the portrayal of women in movies called The Bechdel Cast every Thursday.
Cool. It's the same day this podcast comes out, which makes us enemies.
No, it makes us a double feature.
That's true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You should absolutely listen to both shows.
At the same time.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you sync them up, we work really hard to sync up the shows every single week.
There's some real fucked up messages in there.
Dark stuff, but also some beautiful harmonies.
Right. But mostly arcane magic. Mostly your opening demon gates when you do this. Jamie, thank you so much for coming back.
Thanks for having me.
Of course. Next week, we're going to be starting a new month. It's going to be Quentin Tarantino month, which I know a lot of you have been bugging us to do. So we're going to kick that off with Reservoir Dogs. That's it.
That's a good way to end it.
Yeah.
Yeah, fuck it.
Yeah, who cares? We're done. Bye.
Buck out.
Earwolf is now on the Amazon Echo. They just released a new skill for the Echo smart speaker called Daily Earwolf. Now you can ask Alexa to play the funniest moments from your favorite Earwolf shows. Just download the Daily Earwolf skill from Amazon Skill Store. And if you're a fan of Hello from the Magic Tavern,
and who isn't,
you can also download Magic Tavern Adventure.
That sounds wonderful.
It's a special interactive episode we did of Hello from the Magic Tavern where you can affect the choices we make in the podcast.
I don't think anyone can affect my choices.
I want to interactive.
No, Chunt, you interact. It just means that.
Yeah, I want to interactive. Where's the door?
So if you're listening to this right now and you want to say, Chunt, I wish you were not having this misunderstanding, you could yell that at your Amazon Echo, and it would happen.
Finally, you, dear listener, can help us choose our own adventure.
Download these awesome new skills, and remember, you can play any Earwolf podcast right from your Echo.
New skills, time to level up.
New skills, time to level up. Level up. I'm bad at being an Echo.
This has been an Earwolf production, executive produced by Scott Aukerman, Chris Bannon, and Colin Anderson. For more information and content, visit earwolf.com.